Welcome into a Tuesday morning edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. We are talking the Nets' massively important, epic 110-108 overtime victory over the Detroit Pistons, D'Angelo Russell's heroic effort, Caris LeVert putting in another good game, and then we are getting into it, the start of our one-and-a-half podcast long mega-series, Western Conference Over-Unders. All that and more next on the Locked On Nets podcast.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Nets micropod. I am your host, Gavin Schall, and I am joined by the GOAT. He's headed to Hotlanta on Wednesday, the only city he's going to be in that has a worse basketball team than New York, Josh Bass. Josh, how's it going?
Gavin, it's going well. I'm actually specifically going to cities or states in the first case, Tucson, Arizona, Atlanta, Georgia, to see the teams that we know are going to be worse than the Nets.
Yeah, that's it. That might be the only two that we know are going to be worse than the Nets. Maybe a dip into Cleveland, maybe a quick trip to Chicago. I don't know. I'm excited to see where you get to this year. All right, your and to a lesser degree my beloved Yankees are currently down to the hated Boston Red Sox. Oh, the score just changed as I was saying this. It's now 11-1 in the bottom of the seventh. But Josh, I know you don't care at all because the Nets got a massive 110-108 preseason victory over the Detroit Pistons.
Yeah, no, it was nice that they got that win. Overtime game, obviously, was able to catch first quarter, a little bit of the second half. D'Angelo Russell, I thought, played really well, hit a lot of threes. Was getting people involved in the first half also, even though the assist numbers weren't there because the Nets went very cold from three. Specifically, Damari Carroll, obviously big story in this one is going to be Alan Crabb spraining his ankle pretty badly. X-rays do come back negative, but you have to think that at the very least his availability for the opener against Detroit will be in jeopardy.
Yeah, no, certainly. That's the number one concern, and it'll be fascinating to see how the Nets work their way around them, the rotation, particularly with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson's availability increasingly in doubt. Today, the Nets responded by playing a lot of Jared Dudley and going kind of small ball around their essential players. Damari Carroll actually didn't finish the game. It was Travion Graham out there at the end. He played 34 minutes, and Kenny Atkinson has been playing him quite a bit in this preseason, so it'll be fascinating to see if that continues into the regular season. Obviously, Crabbe's injury potentially opens up a window for him to earn some more minutes, as it does for rookies in John and Musa and Rodion's Karuks.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how the regular season rotation pans out. I mean, Rondé's practicing partially now. You have to hope he's going to get back in time for the opener. I mean, Dudley did go 2 of 2 from three today, but I really can't see him playing for 24 minutes a game, even if the Nets are shorthanded, just because he is such a defensive liability at this point with his lack of foot speed. But yeah, good to have him get out there, get into the rhythm a little bit. Surprised that Kenneth Free didn't play. He was cleared to play, and you'd think that Atkinson would kind of want to see what he had going in at game speed, but maybe he'll play in the preseason finale.
Yeah, no, I think that's pretty likely, and it could obviously also be a somewhat, I mean, you don't want to overreact to one game, but maybe somewhat indicative of his place in the pecking order up to this point. But I want to, before we cover everyone else, and there was quite a bit to cover in this game, I want to talk D'Angelo Russell, because he was really outstanding in this game after a first half where he just shot 2 for 7 from the floor, finished the game 8 for 15, 4 of 7 on his last 7 three-point attempts going into overtime. He was really, really good, and I loved how his jump shot looked in this game. I liked how it looked in the first preseason game, too. Obviously, even going back to last year's form, always looked pretty solid, and it didn't always have great results, but he just seemed so confident in his jumper and the way he was just willing the Nets to stay in this one at the end of regulation. Again, not against a great team, still preseason, so you don't want to overreact to it, but he made some big-time plays, including that spin move into a banker to give the Nets the lead in the closing seconds of this one. He just had some big moments, and it's encouraging to see.
Yeah, it's encouraging to see. I mean, he had a lot of big scoring games last year, so it's not anything out of the ordinary. Obviously, the pinnacle of that was his game against Toronto, where he hit 8 threes in the first quarter, and I was in attendance along with good friend of the show, Marcus Barahal. But really, it was I think his effort on defense was a little bit better. There was one play in the first quarter where he made a concerted effort to stop a transition bucket and did a good enough job just getting in the way. I'm not saying he's Danny Green or anything, but at least sure, getting a body on someone and him being there and being able to put his two hands up to force a missed layup by Ish Smith. So good effort there. Like to see the defensive intensity pick up a little bit, especially in preseason. So that's a good sign. You know, we'll see what happens. He played a little bit with Spencer Dinwiddie. It didn't go great, but I saw enough from him and also from guys like Jared Allen, who had a huge game, Caris LeVert, who I thought looked really good, Ed Davis as well, where I think it's good signs going into the next game, especially after playing the Knicks, where they had a bit of a collapse and Alonzo Trier couldn't be stopped. I think it's nice to see them bounce back and get a win, even if it is preseason.
Yeah, no, I want to focus on what you said about Russell defensively, because while you were sunning it up in California, I was grinding watching Nets-Knicks in the preseason. And Russell, I especially in the first half, looked really solid defensively in that game as well. And you could just tell his effort was on another level. And look, obviously, it's the first two games in the season. Can he do this on a back-to-back in the middle of February? Who knows? But it is encouraging to see him really, as you put it, putting out a concerted effort in that area of the floor, because last year he just seemed so indifferent from the beginning of the season to the end of the season. So that was really exciting. All right, we're going to keep this one relatively short, so let's take our first break, come back, finish talking about the best performers for the Nets in their preseason opening win over the Pistons. Locked On NFL is becoming everyone's favorite daily national NFL podcast. Mondays, it's the local experts on the biggest stories of the week. Tuesdays, former NFL QB Sage Rosenfels joins Matt Williamson. Wednesday, it is Mike Renner of Pro Football Focus. Thursdays, it is the great Mike Sando of ESPN. And Friday, get Matt's picks only on Locked On NFL. Peak ticket season in New York is fast approaching, and we know that you want to be a part of it. The NFL is in full swing. The Yankees are getting ready for a playoff run, and hockey and basketball are just around the corner. And there's no better option to get a great deal on attending any of those events than Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats allows you to sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice. To make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving listeners an exclusive promo code for $20 off orders of $200 or more to save you even more money. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Then use promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and enter promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more. That's LOCKEDON. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. We back on Locked On Nets. Just finished up talking D'Angelo Russell's outstanding game. 25 points on 10 of 22 shooting, 5 of 13 from three-point range. He was really good. Another guy who was really solid was Caris LeVert, 17 points, 9 rebounds, 8 assists, probably should be noted, did have 6 turnovers, but overall, really, really good game for him, and for the second game in a row, you're starting to see what all the hype is about and why Nets beat writers and Nets personnel are so encouraged about his chances to really make a leap this season. He was excellent, particularly in overtime of this one. He went on kind of a personal run that ended the Pistons, a three-pointer, a beautiful assist to Jared Allen. That was kind of the classic play he had last year, but maybe an even better version of it, where he drives into the lane, draws a double team, looks like he's completely trapped, and at the last second throws this wraparound pass that not many guards can throw, but at 6'7", he can pull off to find Allen for an easy dunk underneath the basket, and then just had a nasty drive to, again, help put Detroit away. And just a killer instinct, and the fact that Atkinson trusts him out there in those situations, I think, are both really encouraging signs.
Yeah, he scored pretty efficiently. There was one play he had where he pulled up into the lane and instead of forcing it, was able to hit a nice floater. So good to see that. Again, as you mentioned, passing looked really good. Had a nice pass inside to Trevion Graham, a couple alley-oops to Jared Allen as well. So I think the big thing for him, again, is going to be the three-point shooting. 1 of 3 from three on the night. He needs to get more consistent as a jump shooter, especially off the dribble. And he's going to be, if he does that, he'll be a huge asset to the Nets and really be a player that could make an all-star game or two in this league.
Yeah, no, he stuck a really nice pull-up in the Knicks game, and I wanted to see a little bit more of that tonight. Again, I only watched the second half, but I did not see a ton of it, but I'm excited to watch out for it going forward. Jared Allen, also really, really encouraging effort after, this may be a little harsh, but I'll say it, a piss-poor performance against my New York Knickerbockers. He just did not have it going. Enes Kanter absolutely bullied him. And then going up against a similar physical specimen around the basket, enforcer, in Andre Drummond, he really locked him down. Drummond started this game 1-for-10, came alive a little bit late, but thanks to both Allen and some help from other guys across the board, he finished just 6-for-21 from the field, while Allen going against Drummond, who is generally considered a pretty strong one-on-one defender, went 7-for-12, 17 points, 9 rebounds, 4 blocks. My favorite stretch of the game from what I watched was when he just destroyed Luke Kennard. Drummond got the ball back. Drummond goes up. Allen just skies over him, sticks out a big left hand, gets a block on that. Then later in the game, Blake Griffin tried to yam on him, tried to turn him into Timofey Mozgov from Griffin's rookie year, and Allen just totally destroyed it. And to me, like, obviously, again, a little reading a little too much into a preseason game, but in my mind, it was kind of a proverbial passing of the torch, because Allen, obviously, great dunker, not quite the dunker Griffin was at his prime, but I just like the idea of Griffin being older, trying to expose Allen, and Allen just dominating him at the rim. It was kind of a cool moment.
Yeah, that block was amazing. Did a great job of kind of going vertical and being able to force the block shot there. So that was great. And then also Ed Davis, who I thought did a really nice job, super active on the glass, had one play where he tipped it back, the ball found the net, and also had a couple other plays where he kept it alive and did a decent job on defense. Wasn't a standout, but also didn't seem like a complete liability. So, again, really great pickup. I think we both thought that was the favorite move of the offseason, so excited to have a really formidable force at the backup center position moving forward.
Yeah, I'm interested to see Shabazz Napier, too, once he gets healthy, because it's a kind of a strange situation. And, I mean, I think the clear guys to drop out of the rotation are probably the two rookies. But right now, it just seems like such a stacked group already, and I'm counting right now, 7, 9, 11, 12 guys getting in and all playing at least 3 minutes, obviously, with Allen Crabbe going out really early in this one. But you're still missing those three key rotation pieces, and you're still playing 12 guys in a preseason game, and like, again, like Karuks and Musa, like neither of them necessarily look, I'm sorry?
They're not going to play.
No, I don't think so either. But like, again, like to a degree, they almost look ready. Obviously, Karuks was really impressive against the Knicks in the fourth quarter. He had 5 rebounds in just 7 minutes. He looks way faster and more athletic than I really expected. Musa didn't really do much in 11 minutes, just 2 points, shot 2 floaters. But, you know, he has really solid scoring instincts, and he was kind of the guy who was hyped as being NBA ready out of those two. So it's already like very apparent that Kenny Atkinson is going to have to make some tough rotation decisions. But simultaneously, obviously, the positive side of that is the Nets look pretty prepared if they face the same kind of injuries they faced last season.
Yep, definitely have to see how it shakes out moving forward. I'm assuming a couple guys will emerge. Once Ron and Shabazz Napier come back, knowing the Nets luck, someone else will get injured. So I think the rotation will sort itself out, and Atkinson's pretty, for the most part, merit-based, and the guys who really excel on the court will be the ones getting playing time.
Yeah, I will say this game, again, maybe a weird statement in a two-point win over a mediocre Pistons team, but whatever it was, just watching them, and again, seeing someone like Ed Davis coming off the bench, who just would have clearly been like the Nets' best center option early last season. Like, I was really encouraged about this team, and the fact that, spoiler, in a podcast that will be released tomorrow, we both took the over on the Brooklyn Nets. All right, that's a natural transition. We're going to take our final break, come back, and do Western Conference over-unders. A little bit of podcast-making magic here. We recorded the other ones earlier, but that's coming out Wednesday. So Western Conference, you get top billing. We'll have that next on Locked On Nets. Locked On NBA never went away, and it's still here for you every day. Locked On NBA is your daily national NBA podcast. Every Monday, get the local experts on the biggest stories, and then stay with Locked On NBA all week long with daily 30-minute episodes on everything going on in the league. Follow for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On NBA. All right, Josh, to finish up this Monday night to be released Tuesday morning edition of Locked On Nets, let's talk our three favorite over-under bets in the Western Conference. I'll let you start it off. Who's your first team?
Yeah, first team is the Los Angeles Lakers. I mean, they won 35 games last year. They got a little guy called LeBron James. I know a lot of people were making fun of their signings between Michael Beasley, Rondo, JaVale McGee, Lance Stephenson. And I forget what LeBron is calling those four guys specifically, but whatever terrible name he gave them. I think regardless, people are underestimating the impact LeBron's going to have. They're not going to be a championship team by any stretch of the imagination, but having LeBron and also having guys like Lonzo, Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, and Josh Hart, who are going to improve tremendously just due to the age curve, and also a guy like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who's not spectacular, but is a decent 3-and-D wing, I think they're going to be really good. Obviously, the center position is going to be pretty weak for them. I don't think Mo Wagner is ready this year. Zubats is always hit or miss. JaVale, it's hard to count on him, but I think they're going to be able to win 50 games just by LeBron and the young guys being able to kind of outgun teams.
He nicknamed them Mud. I looked it up. Yeah. It's Mud. Misunderstood.
Motivated, underappreciated, determined. Is that it?
No, I think the last one is disappointments, but I'm not. Okay. I'm not sure. I gotta check on that. Yeah. Anyways, yeah. No, that's a great nickname. But yeah, I'm generally with you. I they were probably my fifth choice, and I just think that's way too low. Again, I think it's like almost disrespectful to LeBron at this point. And even if he falls off a little bit, he just makes such a big impact on teams. And obviously, the Western Conference is absolutely loaded. LeBron on the Cavs last year struggled against the West, but I just think the complementary talent on this team is so far superior to what he had in Cleveland last year. Obviously, you don't have a star at the caliber of Kevin Love, but you have young two-way players with versatility. You have some shooting off the bench. You have a lot of lineup flexibility with all that depth. I just think there's a lot of different groups you can put around LeBron and a lot of different guys who can take weight off him. And maybe I'm overrating these young guys. Maybe I'm overrating the Mud team. But I just think there's enough there that they can piece together 50 wins.
And also the Cavs are not going to come close to winning 35 games this year in a much weaker conference. So let's think about it that way.
Yeah. No, that's 100% fair. All right, my first one is the Warriors. They are at 62. Maybe I'm naive, but I am going over. Obviously, last season they were a little disappointing in that category. They were projected at 67.5. People much smarter than me were saying they were going to win more than that. They ended up only winning 58. But they also had a ton of injuries last year. They bring back essentially the same team. You could argue they lose some depth in some areas. I think they gain some depth in others. And obviously, there's the Boogie Cousins factor. And even if they sit him out through January, I think by the time he is playing, they're going to be absolutely unbeatable. Of course, they'll lose some games at the end of the season. They'll probably lose some stupid ones early. But again, this team is just so much better than everyone else, and they have such a margin for error. And I still legitimately believe like guys like Klay Thompson and Draymond Green could feasibly have their best seasons ever this year. They're still relatively young. They're just entering their prime years. I don't really see Curry or Durant falling off dramatically. So I think there's a case to be made that this could be another 65-win juggernaut, even with them taking their foot off the pedal at various points this season.
Yep, agree with that. I think it makes sense. If I had a fourth one, I would have gone Warriors over as well.
All right, what's your second team, Josh?
Second team is the Oklahoma City Thunder. So they won 48 games last year. 48.5 is the over-under this year, and I'm going to go over. I really like some smaller moves. I think Jeremy Grant's a really good player for them on the bench. Adding Nerlens Noel, I think he has a lot to prove. And really the backup center position for them last year was pretty weak. They had to play Dakari Johnson for decent minutes some games. He was just a huge liability. So now the drop-off from Steven Adams isn't going to be as big. Obviously, Carmelo was really bad for them last year. So being able to distribute his shots to more efficient players. I think second year of Paul George in the system, they're going to be really good. Especially Westbrook, you always know that you can rely on him. So I would peg them in for 51, 52 wins. I think it's pretty clear that they're going to go over.
Yeah, I don't mind that one. I'm not a Russell Westbrook fan, so I personally wouldn't make that bet. I just don't think I think there's a definite cap on your team with him as your best player. That being said, I mean, I think Paul George still has room to grow. I think it's possible he takes another step forward this year, is like a pseudo MVP candidate caliber player. Maybe not quite that good, but maybe just a notch below that. I like the depth more on that team. I like Schroeder. But again, just not a bet I would make just because I don't love Westbrook, but I'm not against you on it. All right, my second team.
It's a little bit weird. I forgot about him, honestly.
Yeah.
Schroeder's a bit weird on that team, but he does provide a big talent upgrade.
Yeah.
So in case that Abrines doesn't work out, maybe they could go small with Schroeder, Westbrook, and then have obviously two amazing defensive forwards in the game with Paul George and Roberson, who's going to be coming back, and then Steven Adams at center. That's a really good lineup.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the sum of that team. Like, it's not necessarily that the players like fit together exceptionally well, with the notable exception of Westbrook and Steven Adams, who I think is really a, quite the dynamic duo, but the talent is just so overwhelming they could feasibly do it. All right, I have the Rockets as my second team. I'm going over, and this is probably the one least confident in out of my six picks, but I'm just looking at it like they won 65 games last year. They're projected at 56.5, and obviously Trevor Ariza, Luke McBain-Moute, really significant parts of the team last year. Maybe you're projecting a little bit of a drop-off from Chris Paul as he gets older. Obviously, guards of his size don't really traditionally age exceptionally well, but I just don't really see them being 9 wins worse this season. I think some of the guys they got were maybe a little underrated. Michael Carter-Williams is obviously taking a lot of crap throughout his NBA career. It is not the three-point shooter to fit into that offense. But I just think how open the floor is going to be for him, I think is really going to be beneficial. And he's looked good in preseason. Melo's looked surprisingly good in preseason. I'll believe that when I see it consistently in regular season games. But theoretically, that's some firepower off the bench. Some of the fringe guys they got is two-way talent. So this is, at least in my mind, kind of a bet on Daryl Morey. I just don't think he was going to allow this team to take a step back with the changes, with how close they were last season. And I think he made moves that he believes can keep them just as competitive as they were last year. I don't know if I buy that, but I also don't think they're going to be 9 wins worse this season.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be 9 wins worse. I think that they'll probably win somewhere between 57 and 59 games. It's tough because they did lose Trevor Ariza and Luke Richard and Bamute, and they're expecting James Ennis to step into a 3-and-D role, which he's capable of, but he really has never had this much pressure on him. Eric Gordon had a great season last year. Yeah, it's obvious that he could. He's been an injury risk. It's possible he could miss more than the 13 games he did last year. Chris Paul, is this going to be the season that the injuries finally catch up to him? And when he does play, is he going to be demonstrably worse on the court? So I think there are a lot of questions. I think they'll still go over. Also, a guy like Nene, is he finally going to go up completely off the cliff and really not even be playable anymore because he's started to show pretty serious decline from his first year with the Rockets when he was an amazing bench player? So there are questions on this team, but I think just having Harden and Paul for when he does play and Capella will be enough to project them into the mid-50s to low 60s.
Yeah, there's definitely some risk built in with that pick, and I think that's kind of the basis of it. Like, either this could blow up and they could maybe just barely win over 50, or everyone could stay healthy and they could have another season like last year and approach 65 again. All right, Josh, final team.
Yeah, final team for me is going to be the San Antonio Spurs. I'm cheating a bit because this is the same day that DeJounte Murray tore his ACL. But they won 47 games last year. Over-under is 45.5. I think between DeJounte Murray being out for the year, Lonnie Walker being injured, this is still going to be a team that competes for the playoffs, having all the heroes in there. But they really are counting on a bunch of fringe guys. I mean, Davis Bertans, Dante Cunningham, who was decent for the Nets last year, but now is going to have to play a bigger role. Pau Gasol, obviously, is he going to keep up his insanely hot three-point shooting? Pirtle's a decent big man, but their guard rotation's pretty thin. I mean, going to be relying a ton on Patty Mills. Derek White, who I know me and you were both really high on coming out of Colorado, now is going to have to play a huge role in his second year. He was basically in the D-League all season.
G-League. So
if he can't step up and play a significant role for them, they're going to struggle being able to create points efficiently.
Yeah, no, 100%. I don't think the talent's there. And they played such a backward style of basketball last year, which is insane because in 2013-14, they kind of revolutionized the NBA with their passing. And as good as the Warriors have been, I don't think any team has really replicated that since. And it was kind of like this magical one-time formula that will be forever captured in time just because of this combination of transcendent passers and a transcendent coach and a transcendent central talent and a transcendent young player in Kawhi. And they go from that to this team that's just full of guys who take mid-range jump shots, and they're going to be probably one of the least effective three-point shooting teams in the NBA. Maybe they'll be okay in terms of efficiency because obviously their best shooters will take the majority of the shots, but in terms of total threes made, I expect them to be near the bottom of the league. And again, you're losing all these, especially with Murray out, these top-notch defensive guards, and you're replacing them with guys that are like DeRozan that are largely mediocre. I don't think they're going to be quite as elite defensively as last year, so I think that's a pretty solid pick, Josh.
Yeah, I mean, their perimeter defense is going to be pretty bad because Patty Mills is scrappy and has good hands, but he can't really hold up over the course of a long season. They're relying on guys like Quincy Pondexter, Okoro White, who's actually not bad. Derek White really hasn't been able to, he's never had to defend at a high level in the NBA, so this is going to be his first time doing that. DeRozan's okay. Aldridge is losing a half step every year. Bellinelli is slow. Pau Gasol is kind of, he can't move at this point. So their defense might be really bad.
Yeah. No, there's an avenue for them to not be great, but you bet on Popovich, you bet on the infrastructure, you bet on DeRozan's offensive firepower carrying them to a degree, but I definitely see them being under on that too, so I agree with you. All right, my final one is Sacramento, who's projected for 26 wins. This is a little bit of a spike pick, but it's my, again, spoilers for tomorrow, it's the only under I picked out of the six. I just don't see them winning any games in that Western Conference. I think they have a chance to be a historically bad team, even though they've kind of sort of figured out some stuff roster-wise in that like they don't have like all these random old vets on their team, and they're going to give a lot of minutes to like their younger guys who were clearly the best players on their team last season. But I just think the roster is so incredibly poorly constructed. They have like seven centers on this team. I think they played a lineup against the Suns that had Willie Cauley-Stein, Scal Labissiere, Harry Giles, and Marvin Bagley in it all at the same time. And again, they're in quite possibly the most loaded Western Conference we have ever seen. So I just think they're going to be completely non-competitive against their conference. And even if they're semi-decent against the East, I see them going under 26 wins.
Yeah, no, I think that, I mean, under 26 is really low. They do have a couple talented pieces. Buddy Hield, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Fox, obviously. But yeah, I mean, there's in a loaded conference. Even the other bottom teams in the West, like Dallas, Memphis, Phoenix, are just so much more talented than Sacramento.
Yeah, no, it's not comparable. All right, that wraps up our podcast. I was going to say our over-under series, but for you guys, you'll be getting that tomorrow. We'll be talking Eastern Conference over-unders and Nets over-unders next time on Locked On Nets.